Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today we're going to be talking with the founder and lead trainer of Turning65Workshop.com, the one, the only, Tom Wright. Tom, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Dave.
Hey, it's great to have you on. You know, I got to tell you, Turning 65, someone who years ago has said to me, 65, that's so old. As I close into my 50s here, I say to myself, 65 is like the new 20. What the heck is that? 65 is not that old, right?
Well, I guess, it varies from person to person. But in your case, I'm sure 20, maybe 25, probably. But
yeah, well, it's 65. But, in turning 65 on a more serious note, there's a lot. And when people are talking about building a solid retirement, and again, we're going to be talking about the Turning 65 workshop here. And if you go to Turning 65, that's Turning the number 65 workshop.com, we're going to be talking about workplace learning to help build a solid retirement. So talk to me, Tom, a little about where this concept came from and what made you get to the point of this type of training.
Well, again, thanks, Dave, for having me on. I spent the better part of 37 years in the financial services world, and both covering both the realm of employee benefits and, for the last 7 or 8 years, focusing on retirement planning with individuals. And I would frequently encounter questions and concerns as people approached age 65 that related to Medicare and Social Security. And it was often difficult to find the information. These are such foundational programs for all of us as Americans. And yet, we never really have any formal education or training in them. We don't have classes in high school or college about Social Security and Medicare. And we, for most people, you just pick up fragments as you go along, watching the news, talking to friends, etc. But there is, when you get in the red zone here, when you start getting close, all of a sudden the magnitude of these decisions starts to impact you, and people, there's really this huge information gap. So I observed that, and in working with people and working with HR professionals who were being approached by their employees with these types of questions and concerns, and themselves struggling with where to find the answer, it just evolves into this workplace learning presentation that fills that gap of information.
Yeah, so as people think of retirement, one of the things, of course, everybody knows, but everybody doesn't necessarily do, is that the earlier you start, right, in thinking about retirement, the better off you are. And, but having said that, there are certainly a number of people, and probably the majority of people, where life gets in the way and they don't necessarily plan or think enough in advance about what that really means. As employees are approaching age 65, what are the major areas, and then we'll get into more specifics, that they need to really think about and get ready for?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, your observation that many people fail to plan in advance is absolutely true, and the result of that is that the importance of Social Security, which covers retirement income at a foundational level, and Medicare, which covers health care expenses at a foundational level, and health care expenses being the number one expense over the span of someone's retirement, they are, they get elevated in terms of their importance. And what we're doing is really trying to provide the kind of the need-to-know information that people can use, that the employees who attend these workshops can use to make informed filing decisions. Because the way that people position themselves, both for Medicare filing, but even to a greater extent with Social Security filing, can, over the span of a retirement, which for many people is 20, 25, even 30 years, can have really significant the impact of that can be significant for better or for worse, depending on how they file. So it's a way, in a sense, a good filing decision for these programs, and again, particularly for Social Security, can overcome a lack of good planning in the years leading up to retirement. So you can kind of make up for that a little bit by making good, informed, intelligent filing decisions.
Are there some examples that you could share of, like, you know, when you're talking about informed, intelligent decisions? First of all, you're talking about, you know, somebody's retirement. So I think it's important to, if you could give an example or two of what you mean by that.
Yeah, I can give. I'll give you a couple of examples. One that relates to Medicare, one that relates to Social Security. I was working with someone not all that many years ago, fairly recently, who worked for an employer that provided a generous contribution each year to their health savings account. This person was healthy; they were turning 65, and they had a high deductible health plan through their employer. And their employer was contributing a large amount into that health savings account on an annual basis. When this person turned 65, they took Medicare Part A, because there's no additional cost for that, waived Part B, deferred that, because of the premium cost. But that decision to take Medicare Part A, to just kind of default to that normal enrollment position, caused them to forfeit the contribution that their employer was making into their health savings account. Once you enroll on any part of Medicare, be it Part A and or Part B, you lose the ability to contribute new funds into your health savings account. You can still spend the money that's in there, but you can't contribute new funds beyond that. And so that was an unintended consequence. That person could have very easily elected to forego Part A. There was really... It comes hospital care, but this is a healthy person, so there wasn't a lot of risk that they would lose coverage, at least in the next few years. And they ended up losing out on a substantial contribution from their employer for the next few years, which was unfortunate. And on the Social Security side, it's not uncommon, and I've worked with a number of people who made decisions to file for benefits early and either arrived at a point a few years down the road, recognizing that, you know, I'm still working, and my spouse is working, they don't really need it, and I've really taken a pretty substantial haircut on this benefit that is going to last the rest of my life. And there are ways to go back and suspend that benefit and kind of let it grow a little bit more before retaking it. And in some cases, I've encountered people who took their benefit early, their Social Security benefit early, kept working, and ran into the Social Security earnings test unaware, and ended up having to have a substantial part of their benefit, which was already being reduced because they took it early, having it further reduced by withholdings because they were still working and they earned over the earnings test, which this year is $16,920. If you're between 62 and 65 years old, goes up a little bit in the year that you approach your full retirement age, which for most people now is 66. But anyway, that issue of bumping into the earnings test, I've had that happen more than once, and that would be another example of just making an uninformed decision that had negative repercussions.
And I think, you know, and again, we're talking with Tom Wright, by the way, a founder and lead trainer for Turning65Workshop.com. That's turning the number 65Workshop.com. You know, with employees staying longer in the workplace, right, staying past 65, yeah, 66 years old, decisions that they initially would have made, you know, which you're talking about making these decisions to tap into Social Security or tap into Medicaid or whatever they're tapping into, really can have unintended consequences. That is, I think, what the key of what you're saying is that you need to plan and think out what each decision that you're going to make as you head into the golden years. Which, by the way, my dad calls the pyrite years or fool's gold, because you know, it's just a totally different perception. But that's okay; it's all right. It's, you know, and I certainly can understand his perspective on it. But right in terms of, he said, no, that's not the golden years. But you know, as people get ready for it, and people are living longer, as they work longer, I mean, this becomes more and more important, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. And that's another interesting aspect to this whole conversation, and one that I frequently have, and I touch on it in the workshop, and I touch on it with people individually, but it's this issue of longevity. And when we think about our retirement years, our so-called golden years, I think that encompasses, at least, and I'll speak personally, and I think it's probably a little different for everybody, but when I think of retirement, and I think of golf, and I think of, you know, the nice leisurely life that you see portrayed, the active lifestyle. That encompasses, I think, for many people, probably the decade from about age 65 to age 75. Again, granted that many people are now working past 65. But, you know, kind of you get to your mid-70s, and the sunset starts to fade a little bit more, and now you're starting to talk about the next decade from 75 to 85. And even beyond that, the fastest growing segment of the population are adults 90 plus. And it's important when we think about retirement and we're planning for retirement, and as it pertains to Medicare and Social Security, that we have in view the totality of our retirement, not just that first decade. You know, you've got to think, what are the implications of these decisions that I'm making for me, for my future self, when I'm 86 or when I'm 92, should I live that long? And I think that's what many people fail to do. They think in immediate terms of, you know, just getting right out of the gate in the next few years, but they don't have a long-term perspective, and that can sometimes affect decisions that they make, and again, with negative potential outcomes sometimes.
No, I think you're absolutely right. It really is important for individuals to understand, as they probably always do, but sometimes forget, that there's consequences to those decision making, and that now you're talking about 20, 30 years of retirement, not That's just right. 10 or 20 years of retirement. It is a
Absolutely.
Big difference.
It can be a third of your life.
Yeah,
you spend
exactly
on retirement.
Right.
And a friend of mine likes to point out that's basically 30 years of being unemployed.
No, it's true. And your money has to last it. Your health care has to last it. I mean, that's a big deal. That's a big deal. So your program, your training program here, we're going to be talking about it in the next segment in depth. Tell me a little about what makes it so special.
Well, it is unique, and it's so unique that I've yet to find any other program like it in the country, actually. And it's unique in a couple of regards. Number one is it's a paid program. So an employer hires me to come in to do a presentation, and I'm getting paid to deliver, and my associate trainers are getting paid to deliver this information in a way that employees can understand, that they can relate to, and that is beneficial to them. So it's a results-driven paid presentation. And that's unlike just about everything else that you will find where people want to come into the workplace. And I don't say this in a disparaging way, because I've been there. But if it's a financial services professional, whether they be on the benefits side or the retirement side, they're either using it as stealth marketing to try to get their nose in the proverbial tent with that employer, or they're trying to use it to hold on to an account that they've already sold, and they're trying to maximize enrollment or whatever. So the real motivation is not the quality of the product and the you know, information delivered to the employees. It's we want to either sell or hold on to an account that we've already sold. That's one model. The other model is to have someone come in from Medicare or Social Security and do a presentation. And those are, you know, there are some great folks that do that. There are some that do better than others, but those are not people who are trained professional presenters. And I've heard more stories than I could count, and I'm sure many of your listeners have seen this, where this is dull, dry, very bland information, and within usually the first 5 minutes, many employees are tuning it out and not really following. And that's where we try to, that's our distinctive, is we do this in a way that's engaging. It keeps people's attention, the slides, the script, all the stuff that we do is designed to try to give them something that will make a lasting impression so that they can come out of the session feeling like they've got a greatly elevated level of confidence in terms of approaching Medicare and Social Security.
Well, we're going to talk about it more in the next section. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB, and we will be right back. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by cmacareer.com and maine.dalecarnegie.com. We're talking with Tom Wright, founder and lead trainer of Turning65Workshop.com. That's T-U-R-N-I-N-G, the number 6 and 5, and workshop.com. Tom, thanks for being on the show today to talk about what is definitely a very important topic. It's about turning 65 and about what that really means when an employee does it, and that the fact that, hey, you have decisions you have to make, and you want to make sure you take the time to do it right. And I think that's what we're talking about here today. So, you know, we talked a little bit about this program that you do. You said that it is employer-based or employer-paid, that you do this at on-site for employers themselves. I guess the first thing that I would ask is, so what does the employer get in terms of providing information? What is, if I'm an employer and I'm saying to myself, well, this might be interesting to my employees, why should I hire him to do that? Why should it be, you know, Tom Wright, founder and lead trainer of Turning65Workshop.com, why is he the guy to come in and provide this information?
Yeah, that's great. That's a great question.
Good. We'll move on to the next question. No, I'm just kidding, Tom. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to do an ad. I think from an employer's perspective, and as I said previously before the break, there really isn't anything else like this out there at this point. There may be someday, but it is a unique program. But from an employer's perspective, I think there are two things that really they gain from it. Number one is it is a tangible, greatly appreciated benefit by employees. As we've said, these are very significant issues, and they loom large in the lives of employees who are approaching retirement age. There is often a considerable degree of anxiety and uncertainty, really rooted in the fact that there's just not a lot of information. They're trying to pull fragments of information from here and there. And so employees who attend this really are universally greatly appreciative of their employer having provided this opportunity. The other thing that happens is that the HR professionals in those firms have an employee population that has kind of a baseline level of knowledge about some of these issues and some of these important issues and understand some of these key filing considerations that they're facing and the impact. And so instead of having a steady drip, 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 drip throughout the year of confused employees coming saying, what do I do, what do I do? And an HR professional maybe doesn't really fully have confidence in the answers to those questions, the rising tide here is going to benefit the employees, but it's also going to benefit those HR professionals by taking a lot of the time and effort and focus that's directed to dealing with this and kind of taking that off the table. And I'll just throw one other thing really quickly, Dave, on this ad that I'm doing. We discovered last year that there's an interest in this subject matter for employees of all ages. And the way that I've broken it down going into 2017 is there are essentially two modules. There's one that is called, we call it Sunday 65. And that's an hour-long presentation that encompasses the basics of Social Security and Medicare. And that's for any employee. And some of the most interested employees that have attended those sessions are in their 20s and 30s. They're understanding it as it deals, you know, faces their parents or even things like Social Security survivor or disability benefits. This is the class they didn't get in high school, you know, on these things. And then there's the almost 65, which is a 90-minute presentation, which is a little bit deeper dive for those folks who are age 60-plus, who that's where we get into a lot more of the details of what's involved in filing and what are the eligibility rules and so forth that would not be of interest to folks who are younger.
So you have really two courses, right, two individual programs that you talk about. One is the first format is almost 65 for employees age 60-plus, and then someday 65 employees for all ages. I guess the real question for both is, let's break that down a little bit for the audience, right? So let's talk about let's take the first one, right? Let's take almost 65 for employees age 60-plus. Tell me about that program. Tell me what the specifics are, a little bit of what the meat of the potato is here, and let's go for that.
Sure. So with that one, we cover the basics of both of these programs, how the programs are structured. We go through, you know, with Social Security, we talk about if your benefits are taxed and spousal benefits and if you're divorced, getting benefits from your ex-spouse and survivor benefits, all those kind of things. We talk about the basics. Then we talk about the basics of Medicare, Part A, Part B, Part C, which is Medicare Advantage, how they interact, how they are, whether they're very different, you can't do them both simultaneously. We talk about the Part D drug benefits. We also talk about if you're staying on the job, and this is an important part of it, how your Medicare eligibility impacts your group health benefits. And that's a big subject that we cover. And then we do talk about things that are sometimes, depending on where we're doing it, and this is at the employer's discretion, we'll talk about things if we have a spouse who's a Maine State employee or Massachusetts or Connecticut, and what about the windfall elimination, the government pension offset, things of that nature. And I walk people through how you actually file. You can file for Social Security and a number of different websites, do it right on your phone. Medicare, you can do through the Social Security website, because actually Medicare is a part of Social Security. It's Title 18, I believe, of the Social Security Act. But I walk them through how you actually file, what that process is like. I talk about getting your Social Security earnings and benefit statements, how you can use those to project benefits in a way that's more accurate than the standard form that you get. Talk about how the benefits are calculated. All that kind of stuff is what we talk about in the more detailed presentation, the Almost 65, which we like to call the original Turning 65 workshop.
Okay, so that's the original one. It gives you details. It talks about a financial side. It talks about specifics. Do people get to ask questions, or what type of format do you provide?
Yeah. They all receive a workbook, and it has information in it that follows the slide presentation. And Usually the way it works in most of the presentations that I've done, we have multiple small group sessions throughout the day. So I've only done a couple where we had like one large presentation. In a larger context, it's difficult to entertain questions because it ends up going a lot more than an hour. So in smaller sessions, you know, questions are easy to do, although, again, we always try to be mindful of the time factor. And so we do leave time for questions and answers at the end.
Perfect, perfect. Okay, the second program, the Someday 65 for all employees of all ages. Yep. Tell me a little bit about that program.
This is really interesting because, you know, I'll give you a good example of this. Millennials, and even now Gen Xers, but it's mostly millennials who would be in this grouping. They view the world different than baby boomers do. And this is all new to them. And I've had many interesting comments from some of the attendees. They are very appreciative of it. They see these FICA withholdings coming out of their check week after week after week after year after year. And really don't, you know, it's just for old people. They don't understand the disability benefits, the survivor benefits. There are aspects of Medicare that also are of interest to them. I do focus a little bit more on some of the current events of these programs. You know, what are the funding projections? What happens if the ACA is repealed? You know, the ACA, there was a massive infusion of money into Medicare and Medicaid. And by the way, I always explain the difference between those two programs to people. But that pushed out the solvency projection by 12 years. Back in 2009, the trustees report showed the current benefit levels would not be able to be sustained beyond 2016. So we would be in deep doo-doo right now had it not been for the Affordable Care Act. So that pushed it out all the way to 2029. And so, you know, this is stuff that they're interested in, you know, what's going to happen and so on and so forth. So I talk about that. And I try to bring it down to a level that's less about the nuts and bolts and more about the big picture and try to help them get a perspective. It's a one-hour session. And what a number of employers are now doing is they do that open to all employees, and then they do breakout sessions afterwards for just those that are 60-plus, and we do like a little mini half hour on the additional detailed material just for them.
You know, you did mention Medicare and Medicaid, and I think just because you mentioned it, could you give a brief differential conversation about what that really is?
Sure. It's unfortunate that the names were chosen because they're way too similar. And Maine hasn't helped by naming its Medicaid program MaineCare, which sounds like a hybrid between Medicare and Medicaid. But anyway, so Medicare is universal health insurance, largely, for Americans age 65 and over. And a little asterisk on that, also, if you're under the age of 65 and you're disabled, you're collecting Social Security disability benefits for at least 24 months, you can also go on Medicare and a few other smaller subcategories. But by and large, Medicare is the universal health insurance for Americans age 65 plus, and it's regardless of your income, although you do pay a surcharge on your premium, your Part B premium, if you're high income. Medicaid, on the other hand, is a federal low-income health insurance plan that provides health insurance to low-income individuals regardless of their age. So you can be 21 years old and be receiving Medicaid based on your income and asset levels. The other interesting thing about Medicaid is it's funded for every two federal dollars, there's a dollar of state money. The program is administered at the state level. So in Maine, we have MaineCare. Different states have different names for their programs. But interestingly, one category that is essentially not covered by Medicare, but is covered by Medicaid, is nursing home benefits for the impoverished elderly. And that's a whole separate radio show about, you know, middle class folks trying to put their assets in a trust to qualify for Medicaid/Medicare. But that is something that you would think would be part of Medicare, because Medicare is health insurance for the elderly. But in fact, Medicare pays little or nothing for nursing home coverage, whereas Medicaid, the low-income health insurance, does have a provision for low-income elderly for nursing homes.
Okay. So you gave a great detailed explanation. We have more to talk about when we come back. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. And we will be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis, as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. We're talking with the one, the only Tom Wright, founder and lead trainer for Turning65Workshop.com. That's Turning, the number 65, Workshop.com. And we're talking about workplace learning to help build a solid retirement. I know all you HR professionals out there are thinking to yourselves, I can't wait to retire. Well, this is the stuff that you need to think about. You need to think about what matters to you and are you ready for retirement? And Tom can help with that. Tom, you're going to be speaking at the Maine HR convention. You're going to be speaking on Friday the 12th, I believe. Well, tell me a little bit about the program that you're going to be doing there. By the way, Maine HR Convention or Strategic HR is a great sponsor of the HR Power Hour. I just want to make sure we mention that because they are a great organization. And so anyways, you're going to be speaking. Tom, tell me a little bit about the workshop you're going to be doing there.
I'm really looking forward to it and was honored to be asked to do this. The presentation is going to be specifically for HR people to show them aspects of Medicare that will broaden their knowledge base and better position them to assist employees who are coming to them looking for some guidance. The title is Help. We have employees turning 65. What should we tell them about Medicare? And we're going to start by covering kind of the history of the Medicare program and some of the demographics behind this very pronounced increase in the number of people staying on the job past age 65 who are encountering this collision between Medicare eligibility and group health benefits. And so we're going to work in that space and bring out a lot of the important information that they need to know that will, and a lot of it is stuff that's not, it's not common knowledge. And there are a lot of very important but specific rules and requirements that can have a big bearing on how Medicare and group health plans interact. So that's what we'll be covering.
Awesome. So, you know, as we're talking about HR professionals, and, you know, maybe you have some, you know, key points that you could go over that HR professionals should know about the filing considerations facing their 65-plus employees. I think, you know, this is an area that, you know, when we're talking about tips that HR people need to know about, if you could share some with them, I think that would be very beneficial.
Sure. I think first and foremost is just making sure that they understand in their minds that the Medicare age, which is age 65, is a fixed target. And at least at this point, there are no serious discussions about extending that. So employees who plan to stay on the job beyond age 65 are dealing with Medicare. That's a different eligibility issue than Social Security's full retirement age, because you can retire and take Social Security benefits anywhere between 62 and on up. And most people probably wouldn't go beyond age 70, but making sure they understand that those are, they used to be historically one kind of, you know, the universal American retirement age was 65, but for their employees who are in this window now, they're going to take a reduced benefit for Social Security if they file at 65, and there are implications on the earnings test and so forth. So making sure they're clear about that. This issue about refusing Part B of Medicare is an important one. And I won't try to cover all of the aspects of it, but suffice it to say that for many people, they're looking at, gee, do I want to pay this Part B premium, which for folks who are new to Medicare this year is $134 a month. But for many people, there's this thing called the IRMA, Income-Related Medicare Adjustment Amount. And if someone has individual income of over $85,000 or joint income over $170,000, they actually have a surcharge. And that surcharge can add up pretty significantly. So a lot of people are not sure whether, should I take Part B of Medicare? And the question then is, well, if I refuse it, am I going to pay a penalty down the road? And understanding how those rules work is something that is an important bit of information, probably a little bit more than I can cover in my comments right now. But that's an important, understanding that issue around refusing or waiving Part B. And then I think it's also helpful to have a good handle on Social Security spousal benefits. Benefits for spouse, if you have a non-working spouse, or your spouse is working, the deemed filing rules, survivor benefits, if your spouse passes away, and then also if you're divorced. What about divorced spouses? How do those benefits work? So those would be kind of and there are more, but those, and we'll be talking about those things at the workshop HR convention, but I think having a solid working understanding of those issues will really be of benefit to an HR professional.
We're talking with Tom Wright, founder and lead trainer for Turning65Workshop.com. Tom, there are some other aspects to this that I don't know if I included in your programs, but are certainly things that people may think about. Veteran status. If they work for a county or government, they might have a different type of pension. If they work for a teachers union or they work for a university, it might have a different type of function that goes along with this. Do you include in your topics, or do you tailor them, these workshops, to the audience to deal with things that are, you know, that are a little bit outside of necessary Social Security and Medicaid, but could have an effect on those?
It was a great question, Dave, and the answer is yes and yes. if I'm doing a small group presentation, I will typically ask for a show of hands, does anybody here have a spouse who's either a veteran or works for the state or, you know, county government or municipal government? And if there are, then I'll quickly go into the windfall elimination provision and the government pension offset, which affect Social Security benefits for those people. If not, then I'll skip it because, we're always kind of being mindful of the time, and I don't want to give people a lot of detailed information. If that little grouping, it would not be a benefit to them. But it is Maine has the heaviest concentration in the country of retired veterans. We are also one of 12 states that has opted to keep their public sector employees at the state, county, and municipal level outside of Social Security. And two other New England states, Connecticut and Massachusetts, also do this. So it's a big issue in New England. In fact, there are a number of municipalities in Rhode Island as well. So we have this little enclave up here in New England where this is a real issue. And both of those provisions under Social Security, the government pension offset, which affects spousal benefits if you happen to be a state employee, or the windfall elimination if you've worked both in the private and in the public sector, they're not that difficult to understand. And those are really key provisions that can have a potentially big impact. So I do like to cover them in those settings where it's appropriate to do so.
So the other part that you might be asked, I'm sure, about is whether or not a person has a disability or somebody has a situation where they're maybe on Social Security having to do with spousal death or something like that. Are there unique, challenging situations that you deal with one-on-one, or do you discuss to the group? How do you handle those type of unique challenges?
That's another good question. So this workshop, by its nature, is general. You know, we're staying up at the treetop level. And it also is the kind of thing, just the nature of it is, I'm not able to engage in any kind of ongoing consulting or consultation with people after the workshop is over. I'm moving on to the next one, you know, type of thing. But I will frequently meet with employees afterwards, and sometimes with their HR people, and will give them my best understanding as to how they ought to deal with those. The issue of disability is not uncommon. It's a big part of the Social Security program. It's also a challenging one, determining whether a person is in fact disabled, how that works, and all the issues surrounding that. And the survivorship issue is also, likewise, is an important one. If someone has lost a spouse and they're receiving Social Security survivor benefits, what are some of the impacts of that? And so it's not uncommon for me to have kind of sidebar conversations afterwards and try to give folks, and really what I'm trying to do is steer them in the right direction, give them as much general information as I can, and then steer them in the right direction for further assistance.
And that's really what we're talking about, right? Providing knowledge and information so that Absolutely. Individuals and groups can think about, first, the top line, the 30,000, the 15,000 feet. You know, here's what you should think about. And then it really does come down to, doesn't it, at the end of the day, each individual's personal situation and what would be best for them. Because there is no one answer for everybody, but there is certainly an individual discussion that has to be had. And so I would just say that, you know, HR professionals get asked a lot of questions. And as an HR professional, there are times where I say to myself, I'm not sure I should really answer that question. How do you advise HR people? How do you advise, you know, business leaders of what they should and shouldn't say? Because, you know, hey, we're talking about a very serious part of their life.
You are. And that, I think, is that's a very good question. It's a very challenging issue. And I think there is a point at which the ability of an HR professional to give personalized guidance or advice, there's a line that you really can't cross there. You have to send them, you give them as much general information as you possibly can, and then it's a question of understanding where those resources are that would go beyond what you're capable of doing. And there might be legal issues, there might be tax or accounting issues, there might be financial issues that pertain to, you know, retirement plans or group benefits, and you really need to hand those off, those type of complex individual situations, you really need to hand those off to folks to get specific professional guidance. Having said that, the more information of a general nature that you can supply, the better position they'll be to have those conversations with those advisors, as well as going to Social Security or Medicare directly as well.
We're talking with Tom Wright, founder and lead trainer of Turning65Workshop.com. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
Hi, I'm Tom Wright, and I created the Turning 65 Workshop to help employees build a solid retirement. Specifically, we give employers the resources they need to help their employees who are approaching age 65 make informed decisions regarding the very important and often very confusing health coverage decisions they face when Medicare eligibility enters into the group insurance picture. The workshop is also designed to help these employees understand important Social Security filing considerations. The challenge facing these employers and these employees is really significant. At this stage of life, healthcare decisions and financial considerations related to Social Security are tremendously important. There's a lot at stake in these decisions that employees are facing. There's often not one place to readily find this information. There's no one resource that employers and employees can turn to. That's where the Turning 65 workshop comes in. We don't want employees to feel uncertain and frustrated, not knowing if they've made the right filing choices. And so that's what we do. I spent a long career in the employee benefits world, and at the latter part of that career, I also did some retirement planning work. Involved in all that was public speaking. We understand it's not just the information that's conveyed, but how it's conveyed that really makes a difference. We strive to speak plain English so employees understand what we're talking about and are able to take that information with them and make good decisions.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. And of course, you're listening to the HR Power Hour. I am your host, David Chulo, and I'm talking with Tom Wright, founder and lead trainer of Turning65Workshop.com. You know, Tom, as we wrap up the show today, and first I want to thank you for being a great guest. I think this was great information and really very relevant for today, since, what is it, 10,000 people a day are hitting retirement age. Let's talk about briefly here the future. So tell me a little bit about what is your take on the long-term financial stability of all these programs, and do people after age 65 or people coming up to age 65 have to worry? Because we know we've heard a lot of noise in the media, but do they have to worry?
I love this question, and it comes up a lot. And I'll start by saying,
don't be a lawyer now. Come on, we want good answers here. I wait for you to go, it depends. No,
well,
I want an answer. Come on now.
This is a helpful perspective because I have been in the financial services world going back to 1980. And I had discussions with people back in the 80s about Social Security and Medicare going broke. And if someone back in the 1980s made the decision to file for benefits, let's say early, this comes up a lot, should I take Social Security at 62? Because if it goes broke in 10 years, at least I'll have gotten my money. And I said, well, if you did that back in 1989, and you're now coming up on 30 years of retirement, you're now in your 90s, you left hundreds of thousands of dollars on the table because you filed early as opposed to waiting. You know, I think there's always been this question, and surprisingly, we keep staying one step ahead of the financial grim reaper on these programs. And so I don't think it's ever a good idea to count them out and to make decisions that are based on the assumption that they're going to go broke. Having said that, I would say there are two things that are really to watch. Number one is if the United States economy remains strong and growing, and we avoid any of these catastrophic corrections like we had in 08 and 09 and back in 2000, 2001, that will keep the program, that'll keep the revenues, the payroll taxes coming in at a healthy level, and that will do a lot to extend out the solvency. The other issue, of course, as we've talked about earlier, is the ACA, and I think if that gets knocked out and there's not funding to replace that, that would have a pretty dramatic impact on Medicare's long-term prospects. The other thing that's important to recognize, when they talk about 2034 being the projected date where benefits will no longer be revenues will no longer be adequate to cover benefits for Social Security in 2028 for Medicare, all that means is there's going to have to be an adjustment either of increased revenues or decreased benefits. And it doesn't mean that, you know, we all know there's no vault in Washington, D.C., where all this money is stored, right? It's all based on promises. And I think, you know, there's time still to work out arrangements that would bring in increased payroll taxes, not that we want to see that, but, you know, it's going to eventually have to happen, as well as reducing benefits by extending out full retirement age for millennials, or increasing deductibles and co-pays under Medicare. All of those kind of things can be done to keep moving the programs forward. I'm cautiously optimistic.
It's probably a combination of both that they're going to need to do. I mean, people living older. And I think that that's just a natural progression of where we're headed. There is only one vault, Tom, and that's in the wallet, right? Every wallet that pays those taxes. It's the only vault there is. And so I'm going to leave on that note, and you don't have to comment, okay? That's just so funny. Tom Wright, founder and lead trainer of Turning65Workshop.com. Great show today. Really appreciate all your information, and thanks for being a great guest.
Thanks, Dave. I really appreciate it. Thanks.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB. Please go to HRPowerHour.com after this show. You can see Tom's information. Click on it to get to his site and get to his information directly. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB on 100.5 FM. And now your HR Tip of the Week. Your HR Tip of the Week is being sponsored by VeralDana.com.
This is Ben Ford from VeralDana's Labor and Employment Group. Can a manager be so bad at delegating that they are no longer exempt from the FLSA? According to a U.S. District Court in Massachusetts, yes. Last year, the Department of Labor brought a case against a popular donut franchise owner claiming that the store manager was not exempt because he performed non-managerial tasks. Both sides agreed that the manager had the responsibility to run the store, but failed in that responsibility because he could not delegate tasks. The court denied the franchise owner's motion to dismiss and agreed with the DOL that the executive exemption depends not on the employee's job description, but on what the employee actually does. The lesson from this case is that failing managers can cost you more than just lost productivity. They can also cook up some massive FLSA liability. If you have questions about failing managers, or anything else for that matter, contact Veral Dana.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by VeralDana.com. Next week on the HR Power Hour, we're going to have a split show. The first guests are going to be Heather Bassett and James Brissenden. They will be speaking about Strategic HR, three amazing conferences that are going to be happening in 2017 that every HR professional should attend. Main HR Convention, Strategic HR in New Hampshire, and the Workers' Comp Summit. Those three conferences, you're going to learn about them. The second show is going to be with Chris Sinkar. He's from FranChoice, and he's going to be talking about how you can use franchising as a transition from employment into business ownership over time. Especially, we're going to learn about semi-absentee businesses. That's on the next HR Power Hour. Thank you for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 a.m. or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.